Right, welcome back, guys, to Tough Conversations podcast. Today, we'll be talking about Football Club Barcelona's chances in the Champions League this season. As you can recall, last season, Barcelona narrowly missed out on a Champions League final by a late equalizer from Inter Milan, went on to lose in extra time. So this season, we've been drawn up. We have our eight opponents in front of us. We know exactly what we need to do to progress to the final, or the first eight and the final 16. And then from there, we'll see where we'll go. We hope for a favorable draw. And so today we're going to be talking about our opponents, our eight opponents in the Champions League group stage. Joining me in this discussion today is ever-present analyst Kenis. Welcome back to Tough Conversations. How do you do?
Thank you, and happy Sunday. I'm very well. It's international break, and I miss watching the team of my life. I hope you have a great discussion.
Oh, very much so. And joining me for the first time today is Mr. David, someone I've followed for a long time. I respect his opinions. He's a long-time Barcelona fan spanning two decades. So he's bringing his wealth of knowledge, especially on the opponents that we'll be facing, since we've been facing them for quite some time now, especially some of them who are a bit too loud for my liking and possibly too loud for the liking of Barcelona fans. Mr. David, how do you do? Welcome to Tough Conversations.
Yeah, good afternoon, Sam. Good afternoon, Synergy. Thanks for having me on the show.
Cheers. So moving on immediately, we'll start our Champions League conquest, because I think we're going to win this season. Away to Newcastle on the 18th of September, so this month at the time of recording, we are going away to St. James's Park, famous for being loud, famous for being rough, famous for being a bit of, you know, hooligans. So what are we going to expect at St. James's Park, analyst Kenis?
Yeah, so it's going to be an interesting game. It's crack. It's something you want to pay for to see. It's going to be like a movie. So I expect them to give us a game. I mean, it's their home, and if they want to have a shout at the Champions League, if they want to get past the stage of the Champions League, they should compete. But I think for technical reasons and for the fact that we would enjoy possession. When I say enjoy possession, not like they are not going to press us and make us make a lot of mistakes and lose the ball. I expect to see that because of the physical presence they have, especially in their middle. If Bruno Guimarães, Julinson, and Sandro Tonali, they are like thugs. So if they are fit, I expect them to, you know, impose their physicality. But again, we have a Pedri who resists that press, and a Frankie de Jong on his day. So the battle for me is going to be in the midfield. I want to see, or I expect to see, how we respond to the physical advantage that they have, how we are able to keep the ball and probably pass them to death. And also, you already know what I think about the high line. I mean, every team plays high line, but when we lose the ball, the fact that we don't adjust that line, you know, now you've lost the ball, they are coming to you, try to adjust the line to reduce the space between the goalkeeper and the your defense line. Yeah. We don't do that. It's almost as though our first response is to make a forward be on offside. And I mean, it's too generous. That kind of system is too generous. So if Newcastle don't score, I'm going to be very surprised. So I expect them to score, considering that it's their home and they've watched us for how long now. Levante scored, Vallecano scored, a lot of teams in Champions League also scored. We barely did a clean sheet in the Champions League, but we now, because of the kind of forwards we have, I expect us to outscore them.
All right. Talking about scoring, Newcastle have not been doing a lot of that lately. Mr. David, they've picked up just 2 points out of a possible nine. They've lost Alexander Isak to Liverpool, last year's Premier League champions. How do you expect Newcastle to, you know, I mean, we've considered 12 big chances in just three games. That's, we're averaging four big chances considered versus, I wouldn't say low-level La Liga teams, but versus La Liga teams. Now, this is a Newcastle side that finished fifth in the league last season. Now, they've also lost Alexander Isak. So, Mr. David, walk us through how Newcastle's attack might actually cause damage to Barcelona's, especially as analyst Kenny has mentioned, our high defensive line, since, you know, we're not really pressing as we used to last season. So what are we expecting from a Newcastle attack that is devoid of Alexander Isak?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, so Newcastle are side with speedy wingers, the likes of Anthony Gordon's, Jacob Murphy, and their new addition.
They just signed Elanga as well. That's the quickest player.
Elanga, Anthony Elanga is one of the quickest players in the EPL, of course. And of course, last season, I think they underperformed, even with Alexander Isak, they underperformed their XG last season, But then they've also added this German striker, Nick Otamendi. They've added him. And of course, goal scoring shouldn't be their problem. I think they might make a goal against us in that tie, Because they're a team that is actually very good with turnovers. They know how to disrupt play. They are good with turnovers. They are good with the game pressing. The style very synonymous with Jurgen Klopp, the ex-Liverpool coach. They are very good with high pressing. They are good with turnovers. They are good with counter-attacks. And with the kind of players they have in the midfield, the workaholics, the physical players like Tonali, Joel Linton, and Bruno Guimaraes. But then we have the base of our midfield is consisted by two press resistance, if not the most press resistant players in Pedri and
Frenkie de Jong.
And Frenkie de Jong, So I think we shouldn't have a problem with the midfield battle. But it's going to be an end-to-end game for sure. I'm very definite of that. It's going to be an end-to-end game.
Okay, thank you for your input. Coming back to you, analyst Kennis, we mentioned that we're expecting physicality from Newcastle's midfield trio. Joe Linton just goes about kicking who he likes when he wants and basically just gets, you know, a pat on the back. Don't do it next time. That's what he enjoys. He enjoys a physical battle. We watched a 10-man Newcastle almost pipe Liverpool from two goals down. So they are that kind of team, especially under the lights, 8 p.m. at St. James's Park. They have one of the loudest fans in the Premier League. And on Champions League night, first game of the Champions League season, expect fireworks. So, talking about their midfield, we've just mentioned they have fiery characters in there, in Joel Linton, in Sandro Tonali, in Bruno Guimaraes. Talking about Barcelona's midfield, do you think it is time we go away from, you know, step away from this number 10 gimmick? I've always come here and I've mentioned this. Barcelona does not need a number 10. The number 10 rather, should I say, diminishes our ability to press effectively or to defend effectively from midfield. So who is that third midfielder? Because Mr. David just mentioned Pedri and Frenkie. There's a third midfielder spot. Who should get it? And how should we contend with Newcastle's midfield?
If we are going to exclude the number 10 role, and we know Hans Flick is very big on that, even if we look at when he was in Germany, what he was doing with Bayern Munich, you would see Thomas Muller was key for him. So it's going to be difficult for him. But let's say something happens and he sees reason to share in our sentiments, I think Gavi should take it while Frankie keeps the base. Why I'm saying it is because first of all, Gavi can play the left center midfield comfortably. You can move Pedri to the right, or either one, both of them can do that because they don't have limited angles like that. So if you keep Frankie at the base, you don't lose the progression you want, and you're able to beat press as often as you can. Then people would say that Frankie de Jong doesn't really, he loses concentration when we are out of possession. So Gavi gives you that, and Gavi by far covers up for that. Away from that, I would say in the future, it has to be Bernal, Gavi and Pedri for me. But for now, I think Frankie still, there is no way Frankie would not, you know, make the team. And there's a case for Casado. But now that Gavi is out, I don't think he will be ready by the Newcastle game. If I am to set my midfield trio, it's going to be Casado, Frankie and Pedri. But I'm saying if everyone is fine and everyone is fit, as of today we are having this conversation, it's Frankie, Gavi and Pedri for me.
Okay, talking about our midfield trio, I am on record saying that Fermín López and Dani Olmo are good players, very good players. But they are not players whom I would rather lose defensive stability for. If that player in the hole was Lionel Messi, was Neymar, I would sacrifice ball, should I say, tackling, ball winning, ball progression, what I expect from my number 10, pressing up front for that, because the creativity and the goal scoring is excellent from these two players if they were my number 10. But not from Dani Olmo and Fermín López. So, Mr. David, how do you see our midfield matching up with Newcastle's midfield? My preferred trio for that game will be Casado at the base of the midfield, Frankie and Pedri as two interiors in the absence of Gavi. And even if Gavi was available, I would honestly still prefer Marc Casado. Marc Casado being because the two games we saw, we're going to talk about other games, but for this particular game, Marc Casado, what do you think about him starting versus Newcastle away at St. James's?
Marc Casado. I think aside from McBurnell, Casado is the other DM in the team currently. Yeah?
Yes.
Because Frankie de Jong is not a DM. He's not a pure DM. Marc Casado starting against Newcastle at St. James Park, I think it's a good idea. But we have to shift the formation to a 4-3-3 instead of a 4-2-1-3. Our 4-2-3-1 or 4-2-1-3, as we are accustomed to. Yeah, I think it's a good idea. It's a good idea because it can create enough defensive cover for both of Pedri and De Jong.
Exactly, because I look at the Newcastle game and I'm asking myself, what exactly...
And then you can help with quality. Because, exactly, like I mentioned before, they are midfield players. The three of them are physicality monsters.
They are hounds.
And they are workaholics. Basically workaholics.
They are hounds. So basically, let me just wrap up the Newcastle game. Do you think we go to St. James's Park and win?
If you are asking me where you should put your money on, I think Barcelona will make a win. Probably a 2-1 or a 3-1 win. Considering the fact that we've only won on English soil, I think we have a decent record on.
Anyways, I understand that, but I don't think we're winning away at St. James's Park. It's a bit too early for this team. Analyst Kenny, do you think we'll win at St. James's Park?
So, I think, yes, I think we are going to win that game. I feel, after the game, against Raya Vallecano, the criticisms were there, people were raising up their shoulders, and Hans Flick made mention of playing for each other and stop being selfish. So they need to respond. And in that game, they have to pass a message that, come on, we are ready. It is what it is. It's a difficult place to play, but I mean, if we don't take 3 points away from these people, so which away matches are we going to win?
Well, it is what it is. I do not believe we are going to take 3 points away at St. James's. I think it's going to be a draw match. I think they are going to probably score first, and we're going to have to crawl our way back into the game. So moving on, our next opponents are PSG. Second match day, 1st of October. Obviously, as Nigerians, 1st of October means a lot for us, the Independence Day. So as Nigerians back home, obviously celebrating that night we played the epic clash, a clash that we're supposed to have seen last season's Champions League. PSG did their own due diligence. They got to the final, and we were on our way to the final before you all know what happens. You know, a player who is basically a granddad equalizing in the 95th minute of the game. Very painful one. So what do we expect, Mr. David? What are we expecting? What fireworks are we expecting versus PSG?
They've started the season quite well. They've won all of their league games so far this season, although the performances they've put up so far hasn't been as convincing as last season. But then, Barcelona, on the other hand, we've won two of our games and we've drawn just one. So going into that Champions League game, I don't think the league form will matter a lot, to be honest. And against PSG, I think we've won five games, and they've won five against us two, and then we've drawn four in official games.
Yes, it's tallied. Tallied.
Yeah. Equilibrium, yeah, he's balanced. So the head-to-head won't matter a lot. In games like that, the head-to-head doesn't matter. It's just like a Barca versus Real Madrid game. The last game, the head-to-head won't count. That's just the truth. It won't count. You have to be up and coming. You have to play your game, be at your best, and just win the tie. So against PSG, of course, I think they'll be without, according to the news we've been seeing so far recently, they'll be without Van Dembele and probably Desiree
Doué. Yes.
So they still have players that can definitely hurt us. They still have Varaskilia. They have Bakula, who I actually believe is a very good player, but a little bit inconsistent in front of goal. But he's a decent player. He's a decent lad. And of course, they still have Goncalo Ramos. And in their midfield, they have Vitinha, who is definitely one of the best midfielders in the world right now. I think he's top three in the world now, if I'm being honest. And they have João Neves, and they have Fabian Ruiz. And one thing that is actually very peculiar about that PSG team is the fact that they don't have an outright number 10. They don't have an outright holding midfielder, and they don't have a number 9 too. So Vitinha, for all of his brilliance, is actually not an holding midfielder. He's a CM by profession, but he plays that holding midfield role, and he does very well with it. So going into that, I think I don't want to be biased or anything, but I feel like Barca can actually win that game. I feel like we can win that game.
Okay, so left to you right now, we're going to beat PSG at home. Well, it's an opinion. That's why we're having the tough conversations here. One thing about football is like boxing, and it's like war. One thing that you must take into consideration when discussing football is styles make fights. And if styles make fights, we know that styles make fights. So beating Paul does not mean that because you beat Paul, you can beat Peter. Why I'm saying this is because I would have expected us to play better versus, say, Inter Milan than would have done versus PSG, even though I did expect would beat PSG if we had met in that final. But that was then. That was when I expected, or when I had, 100% confidence in the team. And sorry to say, but right now, from where I stand, there are more questions about Barcelona's team than there are answers. This game versus PSG, the styles right now are making the fight, and the fight is really not in our favor. Why am I saying this? Obviously, Dembele and Désiré Doué are out of it. I think, especially Dembele, I think he's out for 6 weeks. I don't think he makes it in time before the 1st of October. Still, in that front line, they still have Barcola, and Araujo can remember Barcola very, very, very well, especially from our last game, the last final in 2024. He remembers Barcola very well. Now they've added Kvaratskhelia, who for me is actually outrightly the best left winger in world football. I know people will come up with, what about Vinicius? Oh, what about your own player, Rafinha? Kvaratskhelia is the best, should I say, balanced left winger, two-way left winger. Vinicius Jr. just does not help his left back. Kvaratskhelia will help his left back and attack your own right back. So when you have players like this on the opposing side, what becomes the case? So, analyst Kenneth, I need to hear your view about this game. I've been going on and on about styles make fights. I want to know, what style do you think we are going to be putting up versus PSG?
They obviously manage the ball better, because Luis Enrique does not negotiate possession, and Hansi Flick kind of negotiates it, and he plays too quickly. He exploits the space. He moves away from controlling territories enough, and that's why we don't spend time in the final third. I say this a lot. When we arrive at the final third, it's just like, let's play. We lose it. We start again. Let's play. We lose it. We press. We win again. Let's play. But Luis Enrique is going to, you'll see the process more. The processes in Luis Enrique's model is more detailed. He moves across phases, and when he arrives at the third phase, he tries to stay there, play patiently, looking for ways to unlock that defense. And sometimes they return the ball, they reset. Like, they do a lot of resets, but you don't see Barcelona doing that so much. When we arrive there, we have to take the risk. If it doesn't go in, we let them play their corner. Let them play their goal kick, and let's start afresh. So, because of that, I feel like the game tilts better towards them. But it's been a very long time since we won. No. I think we won them during Xavi's time.
Yeah, we beat them at Paris, and then we were beating them up until the Araujo red card. And we fell like a pack of cards. So, but this time is different. This time is going to be different. I'm very sure about it. So, sorry for interrupting. You were about making your point.
So now I feel PSG has, because they keep the ball better, I feel they have like an advantage to play. But at the end of the day, we have an 18-year-old in the person of Yamal, who we've been asking to do more, to show us more, to tell us, to show us that he's God, because we believe that he has those in his locker. So I would still say that if there is a game that I'm expecting to see a scoreline like 6-5, 4-3, 8-7 scores like that, it's Barcelona versus PSG. So I honestly do not know. Especially because it's pretty much even, aside the differences in the models. We play quickly and they don't. They are way more patient than we are. I honestly don't know where the game goes to, but it's going to be a very interesting one.
Yeah, for sure. Before these individual games, we're still going to have match previews and possibly match reviews after these games. We're going to talk about how each and every facet of the game was exploited by the other by their opponents. For this particular game, there are going to be battles, individual battles all around the park. We are going to see Yamal and Mendes again, coming from the Spain-Portugal Nations League final, where, well, unfortunately, Yamal was really, really pocketed in that particular game. We're going to see, obviously, Bettina Neves versus Pedri and Frenkie. This brings me to my major point, the midfield. We know that in the last time a big team came to Catalonia in the Champions League, they were humbled. Bayern had 60% of the ball, Barcelona had 40%, but they were still humbled. Are we going to see something like that again, Mr. David? Are we going to have to, you know, lease out some sort of possession so as to counter-attack PSG? Especially knowing fully well that PSG have they are very, 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 should I say, open to counter-attacks as they found out versus Chelsea in the Club World Cup final. So is this going to be a strategy from Hansi Flick versus PSG, Mr. David?
Yeah, I think the possibility or the probability of that happening is actually quite high. Because the way PSG actually play, they're a team that are very patient with their build-ups. They are very, very patient. And of course, they play a high-pressing game with their main man up front, Ousmane Dembele, starting the pressing. Then with Nuno Mendes coming back to form a three-man defense line with Marquinhos and Beraldo, or what's his name now? William Pacho, the Ecuadorian. Yes. Then you have Hakimi inverting with the DM. Then you have the other two midfielders, Fabian Ruiz and João Neves, pardon me, please, moving upward. And you have their wingers, Varaskelia and Desiredu or Bakula, as the case may be. You have them pressing the fullbacks of the opposition team. So, talking about the midfield battles, of course, I think we might concede possession. Especially referencing the game against Bayern last season that you mentioned.
Yeah,
I think Bayern had more possession in that game. I can't remember it was up to 60. Yeah. I was surprised when you actually just mentioned it now. But then, I think we might have to concede possession. It might not be conscious, of course. Barcelona are a team that likes to hold the ball and have more possession, definitely. But then, against this PSG side, we might have to concede possession. But I think on the long run, it might pay us. Because PSG are actually a side that are susceptible to counter-attacks.
Yes.
That's something I've come to notice. They are very susceptible to counter-attacks. So. And that might work in our favor with players like Rafinha and Pedri, if he plays. Fermin, sorry, if he plays. And, of course, Lamine Yamal, who is a beast on the ball.
For this particular game, I think I want to introduce a motion. I want to say Barcelona has a modern attack. This modern attack is a bit of the way PSG have played as well. Having players being able to move across the front line and still perform to certain extent. For this particular game at home, I would love to see a front line of Lamine Yamal, Rashford through the middle, Rafinha on the left. I think this dynamic brings about a very, 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 very effective counter-attacking tool. Because versus Bayern, we had Lewandowski, yes. But truth be told, our outlet in that game was still Rafinha. That's how come he was able to score three goals off the break. Three of his goals were on the counter. So having an added weapon like Rashford, and we saw his game versus PSG when he was at Aston Villa at home. He was the best player on the night. He created a very, very fabulous goal for their second. He could have scored if not for, you know, a fantastic save from Donnarumma. I think having Rashford as the pinnacle front person in this particular game can change the tie for us. I don't know. I'm feeling very confident. I said I wasn't feeling very confident just some less than 5 minutes ago, but heading into this game now that I'm seeing things from different perspectives, I can see how we can pipe PSG. And I think we beat them something like 3-2 or a 4-3 or even draw a 3-3. Analyst Kenny, what do you think ends this game? Who wins? Do we draw or do we lose?
We edge them slightly by a goal margin.
Okay, I expect something like that, say 3-2, a 4-3 win, or who knows, an 8-7 win. Fab David, what do you think happens in this game?
Yeah, I think I will tilt towards analyst Kenny said. I think a narrow win will actually happen in favor of Barcelona.
Who knows, that game might end 1-0 and we'll be very, very shocked. The bookmakers would probably...
I actually think it's going to be a very high-scoring game. I think it's going to be a high-scoring game. Both teams will probably score.
Yes, I think PSG has the tools to exploit us the most out of everything we're going to play. So I'm moving on to the fifth game we're going to be playing. This is the big one, in my opinion. This is the one where we're playing for bragging rights. We're playing Chelsea away at the Bridge. Since I was in primary school, we have had a long-lasting enmity, a feud against Chelsea. In fact, going away to the Bridge, we have only ever won once that I've ever watched my own team go away to an other team's, you know, home stadium. We have won once there. And we have suffered so many losses. Quite some draws in the past few years. Anyways, we're going to go there in our fifth game. We play Chelsea away at the Bridge. What are we expecting from this game, analyst Kenneth?
We're expecting chaos from Chelsea. That's how they play. And, you know, when you say a team is going to pack the box, it's usually by default or by design. If they plan to play like that, they'll just come and they'll sit back and you have to try to crack them open while they expect to hit your counter. And other times, by default, they didn't plan to sit back, but because you've possessed them a lot and they can't deal with what you're punching them, they can't deal with the punches you're giving them, then they have to sit back. So Chelsea is such a very difficult team to beat in when it comes to a game that looks like a final. You know, it's 90 minutes and you have to deal with it. It is because of how off the cliff Maresca's team can be, and I occasionally call them giant slayers. You see them picking points versus big teams, and when it's time to play Brighton, Newcastle, Aston Villa, they struggle. And it's typically because they play almost the same way those teams play. So the processes are missing. They are off the cliff. They swing around you. People say massive attack, massive defense. That's what they love to do. They don't give you that respect to allow you to build and play them, you know. So it's really going to be a difficult one. I don't even know what's going to happen in that match, but I know that we are in for a very long night at Stamford Bridge for sure.
Yes. Mr. David, make no mistake, this game is going to be talked about for the next at least 365 days. This game is a massive game because I feel like we're not going to play Chelsea again. This is UEFA basically looked at the timeline on X and said, okay, Chelsea fans and Barcelona fans, every single day on this app, you are fighting. Get this game. And you know the sweetest part of it? They are not scheduling it at Camp Nou. No, we are going away to the Bridge because they know historically, away at the Bridge, it's never nice for Barcelona. I mean, the best experience I have, like I said, we beat them there in 2006, but that was not my best experience. My best experience was in 2009, late dagger from Iniesta, obviously assisted by Lionel Messi. I still think I when in my dreams I see that goal and I wake up with smiles because I know it hurts Chelsea fans a lot and I hope we can dagger them. 94th minute dagger. I'm hoping for that. But Mr. David, what are we expecting away at the Bridge this time around?
Honestly, it's going to be a crazy game. Crazy in the sense that the two fans of the clubs in question, I mean both fans of the clubs in question, are fans who in quotes fight every other day on X, of course. We see it happen. And sometimes we get involved too, of course. So yeah, at the Bridge, at the Bridge, Chelsea at the Bridge. Yeah, the way Chelsea play, actually, the way they play, out of possession, they play 4-2-3-1 formation. So they usually have Enzo coming in from deep to like start play, and then they have either Augusto or Rhys James inverting, and then they have Opama in the half spaces, of course, creating chances, linking up with their wingers and all. But then at the Bridge, I feel like if Hansi Flick gets the tactics right and the lineup, of course, I think it's very imperative that we get the lineup correct on that night. And if a certain Pablo Gavi is fit, I think Gavi should be on the starting lineup that night. I think we are going to need him in that game.
I think so too. Talking about Rhys James, to be very honest, I think I have Maresca is a very smart man. I have to first start with that. Maresca is a smart manager. People do not really rate him that much outside the Chelsea fan base. In fact, inside his own fan base, till he won the Club World Cup, he was still questioned. Now, I'm not saying you shouldn't question your manager. I question as a Flick year in, year out. But I still come on here. I still come on Spaces on X. And I say this, Hansi Flick is one of the best things to happen to this club in over a decade. I mean, the two best signings we've had, in my own opinion, in over a decade are Hansi Flick and Pedri, in my own opinion. But I still question him. But like I said, Chelsea fans question Maresca a lot. But heading into this game, taking a blueprint or a page from how he set up his team versus PSG in that final, talking about Rhys James, I expect Rhys James to play in midfield. In fact, off the top of my head, I expect the lineup to look like this. Sanchez in goal, Chaloba and possibly Tosin at central defense, and Malo Gusto at right back, but he's not going to be playing right back. Just on paper, Cucurella as left back, but in a back three. Something like a Chaloba, Tosin, Cucurella as a back three. And in midfield, obviously, Caicedo, Rhys James, and Enzo. Now, at right wing, remember I said I don't expect Gusto to play at right back. That whole flank is his. But in settled play, when they are not with the ball, I expect to see Kopama as the right winger. And I expect to see Neto as the left winger. Or left wing back, because he's going to be defending a lot. He helped Nuno Mendes versus Lamine Yamal in the Portugal-Spain UEL final. I expect the same thing to happen in this particular game. He was tasked with tracking the run of Hakimi last time when they played PSG. I expect he'll be tracked. Will be tasked with tracking either Lamine Yamal when they are not with the ball or when they are in settled defensive shape. I expect him to track, those runs Koundé makes in between the centre-back and left-back. So now that we know, obviously, of course, up top, we expect their new boy to start in the shape of João Pedro. Now that we know how Chelsea may or may not line up, this is what I think. How do you think we can counter this, analyst Kenneth?
When you say it like that, it's beginning to seem as though they would have they are trying to achieve numerical superiority in the midfield.
Yeah.
From what you've said, if I get you well, it's looking like the lineup they used versus PSG, yeah?
Exactly. I think that's how the lineup.
So I think the very first thing that happened in that game for me is that maybe PSG, they took it lightly and they felt like they were over the moon and by far they were favorites. Chelsea came into that game as underdogs. Yeah, at the time, in fact, it surprised me that they won by that margin. I would have said it's one of those things about football if it's were 1-0, but they won by 3 goals margin. So looking at where we are now and how we could react to that kind of setup, remember when that game started versus PSG, how they pressed from the first minute, it showed their intention. They were not going to respect them. They were not going to sit back. They're going to, and the God of Football rewarded them very early, because when they were doing that, the 2 goals came very fast. PSG didn't know how to get away with what Chelsea was doing. So Chelsea would score, because unless we start thinking that we are going to adjust that high line, and when they start kicking from far away like that and going long, I'm expecting, and now they have a João Pedro who is left out on his day, so I expect them to score. But what we would do, we cannot run away from it. There is something Hans Flick did versus Real Madrid that whenever I remember those tiny 10-15 minutes, it tells me that he knows that the way he is playing has a very big risk, but for some reasons it's as though he enjoys the risk because of the high reward that comes from the high risk. So that game versus Madrid, the first game of last season, there was a time we were struggling to, you know, keep the ball so much. I mean, we were keeping, but we were playing too fast. So he took away Fermín López and brought in Frenkie de Jong from 46 minutes. Like, immediately the second half started, he did that, and Casado was there. It tells us, it passes a message to us immediately. It tells us that, because Pedri's optimal zone of influence is not as a 10. But that game, Pedri still pushed down as a 10. It wasn't as though both of them were interiors. But it did something to Real Madrid. It took away any sort of lifeline that they could even imagine in their head. They struggled to have the ball. They couldn't keep. So the only way for me is going to be to keep the ball and to be patient against Chelsea, not to play quick. Remember, in the final against Pep Guardiola versus Thomas Tuchel, that Pep Guardiola lost that final.
2021.
Everybody, including me, everybody thinks Pep Guardiola threw away that final. I think that way. But sometimes I'm not so harsh on him, because that particular Chelsea, he needed to pass them to death. And for some reasons, he wanted everyone that could use the ball. But Sterling, in that game, you know, he wasn't someone to keep the ball. He was very, very, his risk appetite was so high. He kept on going. He couldn't, like, keep the ball just the way Grealish would keep it. So I say to people most of the times that the one person that forced Pep Guardiola to sign Grealish, no matter the amount of money it was Chelsea, because now he keeps the ball. Do you understand? He just touches the ball inside and outside of his foot. He keeps it like that. He returns it back. He doesn't always go to face the defender. You know, that's where he's losing the ball again. So, Rafinha has to try to do that for us against Chelsea. But you know, he's not going to do that. He lost. He just wants his XG. So if we, this I'm telling you, is the very first cure to beat Chelsea. So if we cannot do this, then we have to open the game up and try to outscore them. That's our best bet.
With these three games, why I picked these three games to really analyze in detail is, these are the three games this season I expect Hansi Flick to deviate away from his tactics. Not completely, but to a certain extent. I brought up the Bayern game last season where I said giving the ball away, just 20% away, and setting up in a mid block and looking to exploit Bayern. In these three games, I expect we should take that route. Obviously, not almost always versus Newcastle, but versus Chelsea and PSG, I expect us to try to use the ball less. Try and hit this opponent on the break. Play a defensive cover in midfield rather than trying to open up this game. Because best believe, Chelsea and PSG have got the tools to hurt us. In midfield, PSG, I don't even need to mention them. They've got players that can unlock us from even defense. Hakimi, Marquinhos is good on the ball. Vitinha and Joao Neves and obviously Fabian Ruiz, who goes into the box. At Chelsea, they've got Enzo, who for me is a perfect replacement for Toni Kroos at Real Madrid. When Real Madrid find out that obviously what they're doing with Adagula is obviously not going to work. Enzo Fernandez is the guy that will replace Toni Kroos. In that midfield, they've also got James. Like, I expect James to also play in midfield. They can unlock us with anything. And they've got runners. Neto, willing runners. Neto, off the bench, they've got Estavao. Off the bench, they've got this new guy. They've got Gittins. Best believe, Chelsea is one team that can exploit the hell out of us. So I'm just going to say this. If we rock up to the bridge the way we've been playing this season, I expect us to have a loss there. I fully expect us to have a loss. But anyways, this will probably be the end for Chelsea game. What do you think we are going to do at the bridge? Are we going to win, lose, or draw?
I need more sample this season to have a say about that game, because it's not one that you expect a particular style from Chelsea. What if they wake up that day and decide to pack the bus, which I don't think they would do, considering from how they approached the PSG game and what Maresca will be thinking. This when you want to play Barcelona, you see the chance right in front of you. It's up to you to take it. And the chance is literally, the space is literally behind us, you know, yes, that defense line there. So you're seeing it. So all your plan is, how do I take that chance? So the chance is there for them to take. It's up to them to exploit it, and it's up to us to stop them from taking it. So I need to see what we do with the high line in the league. Three games, and we don't have Inigo Martinez anymore. We are not even crystal clear on the centre-back pair yet. It's Christensen and Garcia today. Tomorrow is Kubasi and Araujo. But it's looking like at the end of the day, it's going to be Christensen and Araujo, from what I am beginning to think.
Well, but we'll have to wait to see. Barcelona also plays Olympiacos, Club Brugge, Frankfurt, Copenhagen, and Slavia Prague. I expect us to pick 15-15 out of this. Mr. David, quite quickly, as we round up, what do you expect from these five opponents, like I mentioned, Olympiacos, Club Brugge, Frankfurt, Copenhagen, and Slavia Prague? Should we be able to pick up 15-15 from there so that whatever happens in these other three games, we are safe and sound? Because I expect us, the top eight should have 14 points to qualify as top eight. So quickly, what do you expect us to do from these five games?
Yeah, I think I will zero in on Frankfurt. I think we have an unfinished business against them from the 2022 season.
Yes, we do.
Very much so.
Yeah. We have an unfinished business against them. Yeah, so, but then they've sold two of their best attackers in Ekitike and Mamouche. But they've gotten other players. I think they have Baouya now. They have Wai. They still have Knopf, the right back from Dortmund. They still have interesting players. I think they managed to even keep some of their players from that very season I mentioned. They've managed to keep some of them. Yeah, but then coming to Camp Nou, I feel like we should get 3 points in that game. Non-negotiable. I don't think it's negotiable. We should get 3 points in that game. And for the other teams too, yeah, Wood. Should is conditional, so Wood is more appropriate. For the other teams too, yeah, Copenhagen. I think Copenhagen are a side that are very decent, especially in the Denmark league. They are very decent. I think they are first on the log right now. They have decent players. Some I watch. I watch some of their games when I'm less busy, although not the full games, but I see them play sometimes, and they play interesting football. We actually got this our new guy, Rooney Badji, from them.
Yeah, and Badji from Copenhagen.
Yeah, you'll be playing against them, of course. I feel we should win that game soon. And Copenhagen are a team we've had history with. I think around the early 2010s, we used to play them a lot.
That's a lot. Yeah. And
Olympiacos. We should be wary of their striker, their star striker, in person of Ayub El-Kabi. Yes. El-Kabi. That guy is a proper gunman. He's not joking. I think he finished last season with like 18 goals in the league alone. And he's 30 plus, but he's a proper gunman. We should be wary of him. For Club Brugge, a decent side in the Belgium League too. Yeah, I've found a third. I can't remember now, but they have a decent crop of players. They have a very decent crop of players. They have Van Aken, they have Zulis, they have Vermon, and other players. Against them too, from these teams.
Okay. I think I also believe, analyst Kenneth, I also believe you would be expecting 15 points out of 15 in those games. So this is where we've come to the end of this particular episode. Before the individual games, we're going to gather here again to talk about the individual games, what to expect, and what we are going to see in those games. So I just have to thank you guys for coming. Mr. David, thank you for taking out the time to come on board. And Analyst Kenneth, thank you for always coming on board and discussing FC Barcelona. To the viewers, the returning viewers, thank you very much. Like, subscribe, share on all platforms, and we would be on YouTube very, very soon. So thank you guys once again. Thank you for coming on board. Nice to have you here. See you guys next time.